How's everybody doing?
Yay!
Yay! Woo! Enjoying the show?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you for coming. I believe this is the Marvel Universe panel. I'm C.B. Cebulski.
I'm Greg Pak.
And we might have a few other people joining us as the panel goes on, but you've waited long enough, so we're going to get started. The way that we usually run these is just really simple. We're here for you. You guys, you know, spent your hard-earned money to get here in the show. You come to the panel because there's obviously stuff you want to hear and questions you have, and we're here to answer those questions. So we're just going to open up the floor to Q&A, and hopefully that'll lead to some good discussion about Marvel Comics and such. Just to take care of some business first, I did this yesterday. There's three things I don't know. I do not know anything about the Canadian pricing of Marvel Comics. I do not know when Ultimate Hulk Wolverine is coming out next. And I do not know what's happening with Spider-Man, Mary Jane, and The Wedding. So
he also has no idea what's going on with the whole subprime mortgage stuff. So,
those three things aside, anything you don't know?
I know all, but I can only reveal so much.
So let's get those questions going.
Omega Flight? Ongoing?
Omega Flight ongoing. I do not know.
And I can't reveal.
What I can tell you is, you know, the Mike Domingue Scott Collins series did really well, much better than expected in sales and fan response. It was only a miniseries originally, but I know there are plans for some of those more successful minis that came out this year, next year, so I believe you will be seeing more Omega Flight. And on a personal note, hopefully some more loners. So. Okay. At this point, no, there's really no plans for the Marvel Mangaverse. We had the mini, which came out last year, and then there was the one-shot with Scotty, the Spider-Man Legend of the Spider-Clan. I don't know if you got that came out. It was a Spider-Man family special that came out earlier this year. It was a 38-page one-shot that Scotty had done. Looked phenomenal. And those are the where we ended the Mangaverse for now. In the future, we'll see. There was some good response to the trades and sales, but there's no current plans. But you never know.
Can you talk about the role you've taken on with Marvel just recently and what's going on there?
Okay, yeah. Just in a quick nutshell, I was originally brought on as an editor at Marvel. I moved over into talent management, which was kind of a talent scout A&R role. It was just where I would basically full-time dedicated to keeping the talent happy, booze, smooze, you know, go out for dinner, paid to party, so to speak. But a lot of that was had to do with, you know, if there was an inker and a pencil who were fighting or the artists had problems with their editors, they didn't know who to go to. I was kind of the lifeline for a lot of the talent up there, specifically the artists. I really didn't deal with writers. But I always had a bug to write. I wrote some stories before I started at Marvel. And then when I went to Marvel, as more and more time went on, I got the bug to start writing again. And Marvel has a strict policy that no staffers can actually write stories. Joe Q is an exception, obviously. And so to be able to pursue my writing career, I had to quit. And then after I quit, I had to start all over from square one and, you know, started pitching Spider-Man Unlimited, X-Men Unlimited, and slowly built up from there. But, you know, because of my relationships with a lot of the talent and Marvel being kind of a family internally and as with the creators, they asked me to come back as a consultant to help out with just, you know, doing kind of talent search, finding new talent, and, you know, using some of my friendships with the creators now to just, you know, smooth over any problems and just be a general liaison for talent kind of outside Marvel. So I work 3 days a week from home and go into Marvel on 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays afternoon. I have a phone and a cubicle and in the internet, and that's about it. And the rest of the time I spend writing, and when I'm at Marvel, I talk to talent, and now I'm on my talent search, you know, the Tesser Quest, the international talent search. So here in Canada, and I'm off to Asia for all of October, then I'll be in Europe all of November.
Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, go ahead. The Chester Quest is it's going to run for 6 months. It's going to end on January 31st, 2007. We're going to decide who the winners are in February. And 12 pencilers are guaranteed jobs at Marvel Comics. And the project's going to be announced soon. I can't speak too much of it now, but those 12 people all have guaranteed jobs, work prior contracts for at least a short story or more once we decide who the 12 winners are. And there's actually, it's been interesting because there's been even some talent that I've seen now who are ready for books. And when after I finish each show, finish San Diego and finish Chicago, I've brought the stuff back to Marvel. And people have had a chance to look at it, and there's people that they would like to hire now. It's kind of, do we wait and announce, or are we going to find more than 12? I mean, wow. Finding talent is great. It's been successful so far just after two shows. I found a few people here in Toronto as well who are just phenomenal already. So it's an evolving process, but you know, there's some people who might get work even earlier than what we have planned, but there's definitely going to be 12 new pencilers also who get work come February 2008.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good undertaking. I'm so glad that Marvel was able to put their sponsorship and weight behind it. It just goes to show, you know, the commitment that Marvel has in defining the best new talent just internationally. And there's probably going to be a similar outlet for new writers as well coming up soon. I won't be conducting it, but someone else from Marvel hopefully will, but there'll be some new writer options coming as well, so stay tuned for that. I will go here in front and then over here.
Has there been absolutely any dialogue or hints towards whether Ben Reilly will ever make an appearance ever again?
There's a lot of Ben Reilly fans out there.
Like, the internet has really been a base of operations for all those kids wanting to see Ben again.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, just from the meetings that I've been, it comes up every now and then, but at this point there's no concrete plans for Ben Reilly at all. I mean, he's in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe currently, but as for in the Marvel universe, nothing at the moment. But again, it's Marvel, you never know. So, okay, we'll go in the back here. Yeah, in the red shirt. Yeah.
My question was back to the Chess Request for a couple of new writers. Would you look for more of a pitch? Would Marvel look for more of a pitch of a character like Spider-Man, which they can use anytime, or like a character like Kane or Ben Reilly, who's like an untold Ben Reilly story?
The way that I look at it is, you know, there was a period in, you know, of revitalization for old characters, and it kind of started, we were talking about this last night actually, it kind of started with, you know, Grant Morrison on Animal Man and, you know, Swamp Thing things at DC, and then it got very popular to look back at old characters and start rejuvenating them, revitalizing them, and I think that has a lot to do with time passing for the fandom as well. Now you see that characters from the 90s are getting popular again because the kids who were reading those comics at that time are now grown up and they're writing and drawing comics themselves, so there's a resurgence of kind of popularity there. However, when you're pitching to Marvel, a lot of what you see on the internet and what you read in the comics is stuff that's been planned out almost a year in advance. So we get pitches for a lot of revitalization of older characters, even not so minor ones, like Doctor Strange and Nick Fury are the two most popular ones. But Marvel has everything planned out so far in advance that a lot of characters that you're not seeing now in comics and you think would be ripe for a return, there's already plans for them. So there's so many new writers who pitch things that are already in the works that a lot of things get turned down just because of that, because you don't know what's going on. You don't know the inner workings of the company. So what I would always recommend is, for new writers, it would be to pitch something along the lines of one of the major characters, a Spider-Man or a Wolverine. And part of the reason for something like that is that a Spider-Man or a Wolverine story is always going to be a viable story because they're the most popular characters. So an editor, if it's a strong story, might be willing to take a chance and buy the story, even if they don't have a place for it, knowing that in the future they're going to have a chance to publish a Spider-Man or a Wolverine story. You're always going to need stories in anthologies or stories in backups, and if it's a strong enough story, Spider-Man or Wolverine always sell. Where a story with a Kane or a Stingray or something like that, a character that's not popular in the you know, general mindset of comic fans right now, is going to be a lot harder sell for an anthology or for, you know, a backup story somewhere. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I would always
Marvel Adventures.
Yeah, Marvel Adventures is a you know,
stepping point in.
It used to be a stepping point in, and it still is. I mean, the editors might be open to some pitches now and then, but they have the creative team set on that books, and those Marvel Adventures people work so far in advance that where's Mark?
he's being anonymous.
But I think they're pretty set for Marvel Adventures at this point. But you know, the if you want to try to pitch or, you know, write a script, you know, for yourself or, you know, a test script, there might be good characters to pick because they're not as burdened with continuity. Just something like an Ultimate character, it's always interesting to show what you can do with them. But your chances of, you know, breaking in are always going to be better with a short story at this point, just to show what you show your skills and show what you can do. Go ahead.
I know Joe Pugh in the past has considered, well, now since our marriage, he's considered Storm to be sort of an analog of the late Princess Diana of Wales.
Storm to be an analog for the...
So, like, a comparison, but, like, since the first Charles Princess Diana, the Marvel unit, since Black Panther.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, it was just interesting to see that she's one of... I mean, she's in Fantastic Four, she's in Black Panther, she's in X-Men. She's one of the characters at this point who would pretty much go well as something that's, like, an international ambassador for mutant kind and superheroes and the like, and maybe because you want to include more international superheroes in it. Have you ever considered this path for her, like, sort of, like, not even just in her own blood, but in Black Panther or in the X-Men, just going around the world, being that sort of mutant monster, since they've never had that before?
I think Reggie Hudlin had some plans along those lines in Black Panther. I'm not exactly sure where they stand, but it hasn't been brought up exactly in those terms as an international ambassador. But after they got married, you did see them, you know, kind of do the world tour to different places. And there might have been some threads to pick up on that, but I don't think it's been followed up. I don't know if it's been discussed since. Not to my knowledge. I don't know if you've heard anything or no. No, you're all the way in the back.
Let's say you finish a pitch in a series or writing a script. What's the best? How's the best way to make sure that interacts instead of throwing down this huge pile of random stuff?
There's really no best way, and to be honest with you, I mean, pitching for anything, if you're a writer, if you're a penciler, inker, colorist, is hard enough. And getting an editor to see it, you have to try to be creative. I always say that originality is the best way to get something seen. And if you're a penciler, you're sending in samples, I always recommend you illustrate your envelopes, make something eye-catching, and, you know, do something interesting with your samples. If you're a writer, you know, just be fun, be creative in your cover letter, and just make an impression. And I can't give you an easy way to, you know, email this person because your stuff will get seen, or send it to this person, stuff will get seen. There's no easy way. Each editor operates in a different way at any company. Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, they all have different ways that they operate. But, you know, one of my recommendations has always been to people trying to break in is don't go right to the top. Don't email, you know, Joe Q and Dan Buckley, the executive editors, the senior editors. It's always better to start a relationship maybe with a junior editor, an assistant editor, an associate editor. And a lot of people have been against that, thinking that those people don't necessarily have the power to hire and fire people, but they do. Some of those assistant editors run their own books. They start, when they get up and running, they start developing their own story. They want to develop their own talent pool. They're looking to find the next Jim Lee, the next Brian Bendis, the next Todd McFarlane, the next Mark Miller. And they're a lot more open to talent because they want to form relationships as new editors with new talent. So as they rise through the ranks, the talent's going to rise with them and be loyal to them. So that would be one of my recommendations.
Do you feel like writers should, I mean, is a writer better off coming with a book that he or she has done independently that's actually a full-on comic book than coming as an unpublished writer with a script?
In the past, I would say, and it still holds true to this day, that, yeah, you know, the party line for Marvel and DC used to be get published somewhere else first, and then we'll look at your stuff. And it does make more of an impression when you have a book published somewhere else you can slide across the table, because it shows not just level of talent, but dedication that the writer or the artist themselves would both have the drive to do this, to write something they love, maybe do it not for a lot of money, even self-publish it on their own, and it goes to that they're in love with the medium. They have the commitment to actually see this through and the love of the medium. So it does make more of an impression when it comes through like that. Or, you know, and not just comics per se, you know, just novelists, screenwriters, filmmakers, journalists, multimedia artists. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can submit and, you know, make your portfolio a little bit interesting. There's just having the talent as a writer in another medium often translates to comics. A lot of people came from outside of comics into comics. I mean, Greg and myself being two examples of that. So, you know, don't just feel you have to, you know, limit yourself and just show comic book samples. If you are a writer or an artist and you have work in other mediums, feel free to submit that as well. Okay, I'll just go to someone else who hasn't asked a question for someone, so I want to be fair. I'll go to G.I. Joe here.
Just a couple of quick things. Can you explain where Brian Michael Bendis is going to take the Kitty Pryde and Spider-Man relationship?
I don't know. That's a story I'm looking forward to read every month just as much as anyone else. I mean, part of the thing that always bothered me about being an editor and still being in some of the Marvel meetings is stuff gets spoiled for me so far in advance that it takes some of the joy out of reading comics. So whenever I can, I try not to read scripts or plug my ears in meetings so I don't know what's going on anymore. So luckily I've been able to avoid the ending of World War Hulk, so...
And where are your top three polls every week?
Top three books that you read. Oh, my three books? It all depends. I mean, we get the books. The book I always gravitate towards first every month is Iron Fist and Daredevil. And what else would it be? Probably Ultimate Spider-Man. And then, you know, those are the three monthlies. But now, you know, I'm not just saying it's because he's here, but World War Hulk, Civil War, the big events are always, you know, first on my list too, because I like to get those and read them before there's any possible spoilers online, because those are the big books that people seem to always talk about first online, and I'm a huge online guy, so I try to read anything I know is going to be buzzworthy first. Greg, what are your three?
I'm behind right now. Crazy. It's like World War Hulk is coming out on time, every single issue, baby. And it's because we're just, you know, everybody involved in this is working around the clock just to make it work and make it as good as it possibly can be. So I'm a little behind on reading other stuff, but I've been reading all the scripts for the different World War Hulk tie-ins as they come in, and I think Christos Gage has been doing great stuff. I think his Iron Man tie-ins were really cool. Had a lot of fun with those.
Hey, let me ask you a question from one writer to another. When you buy your books and you get your own books at your comps or stuff, mm-hmm. Do you like to read your own work when it comes out? Or do you pick it apart as you go through? Because issues of Loners come out and Marvel send them to me and I'll just let them sit there because I really just, I don't want to see it because I pick up the flaws.
I tend to, I'll go through an issue many, many times during the course of production because, you know, first, you know, we're writing it, then we're looking at pencils, then we're looking at inks and colors, and then we're ballooning. And I'm really lucky because Mark Paniccia, the editor of Hulk and World War Hulk, we're very involved. I'm very involved every step of the way as we balloon the book and letter the book. So I'm going in and tweaking dialogue all the way through, and like shifting sound effects around, shifting things around, just to get the exact right nuance in every panel. So by the time I'm done with that, I feel like I've pretty exhaustively, you know, experienced it. Every once in a while, though, a book will go to press without. I haven't seen a layout with full colors, you know, and so it's exciting when I get the book and I can read it with full colors, and that's a kick in the pants, you know, because, you know, like, it all, of course, it all comes together then. Also, every once in a while, there's a letters page I didn't know they were working on that's in there, and that's always cool. So,
what are they saying about me?
Yeah, exactly. Letters are fun. I have to apologize because I actually have to bounce because I've been double scheduled a little bit, and I've got a screening next door, but thank you guys, and I just want to say thanks to everybody who has been this convention has been awesome, and you guys are awesome, and thanks for all the people who have been coming to the signings and giving us all, you know, such good feedback, and it's been a kick in the pants. So
great. Thank you. Well, thanks, Greg.
And thank you.
Alright, I'm going to go here. Yep.
First of all, how's Icon doing, and what are the plans for it? You have to be a big writer in order to get an Icon book.
Yeah, the Icon is doing well. I mean, the Icon books that come out, Criminal has been fantastic. I think it won three or four Eisner Awards. Add in Criminal combined Best New Series, Best Writer. And then Powers is still, you know, doing phenomenally. They just did a new format. They went up to, you know, double-sized issues, $3.95, new paper, cardstock covers. It's beautiful. There's some other things coming up. I can't really talk too much about it, but it is only available for the bigger creators. You know, it's just the Marvel does not tend to make a lot of money on those books because they are creator-owned properties. So it's kind of you know, they only offer it to the creators who are making them a lot of money elsewhere. And it does make sense, you know. And you know, if we opened it up to people like Image, we'd probably get a lot of good submissions and a lot of good books in from other people, but it's just something that Marvel's not willing to take the chance on right now. Marvel knows what it does, and what it does is make superhero comics, and that's what they do best, and if they broke, don't fix it. But the creator-owned option is a great one for the Marvel creators. It gives them a viable option to keep them happy, because everyone does have that bug to go outside the box sometimes.
Do they have free reign on their stories?
Yes, they do. Yeah. The way that Icon works is almost like the Image deal. There are no Marvel editors or anything like that oversee those books. It just, they submit the final files into Marvel when it's fully colored and fully lettered, and then it goes to print. So, go ahead.
Can you speak to how the Hood is going to evolve with Bendis? Because I saw at the end of the miniseries that Brian K. Vaughan did, there's like certain demonic elements that were kind of introduced but left very much hanging at the end of that series. Do you know what he's going to...
I honestly don't know. I mean, he just appeared back in continuity of the new issue of New Avengers. I thought that was an awesome double-page splash that Lanil did with him kind of just kicking over with the guns and blowing away. I don't want to spill it for anybody. So, but, you know, where Brian Bendis takes it, we'll see. I know he's been in contact with Vaughn about it, so we'll see what they come up with.
Are they thinking about maybe doing another miniseries just focusing on him, or is he specifically
I think he's going to be specifically in the New Avengers right now. He's going to play a greater role coming up, you know, as time goes on in the Marvel Universe, but for now it's going to be for New Avengers.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll go to him first.
Do you have any announcements to share?
No, the two announcements that we made earlier were Adrian Alfona from Runaways is the new announces a penciler on Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane with Terry Moore. There's an interview with him up on a bunch of different websites online you can check out now. And the other one was they announced a Warbound miniseries spinning out of World War Hulk by Greg Pak and Lenny Kirk. It's going to be 5 issues, I believe, and starting after the after Smash special after World War Hulk. It's going to start Korg and Heroim the Old Strong and LOA and anyone who makes it through World War Hulk. We haven't announced the cast yet because you know, we don't want to spoil anything for the fans who are reading World War Hulk every month, but you know, the surviving members will be part of the book.
If you can talk a little bit about Marvel going back to, you know, Mark Miller coming on board with Fantastic Four, JMS04, Mark Miller with Fantastic Four, just those big original books, getting the big talent on them. Is that exciting for Marvel to start launching these flagship titles like Fantastic Four is kind of falling off?
No, it's extremely exciting. It's extremely exciting. And, you know, I think it's great. I mean, as a fan of those characters, I can understand why they want to go back and do those books. Everyone has their childhood loves. And to get creator of those calibers to come onto those titles again is wonderful. And the problem is, and we were just talking about this recently in one of our talent meetings, is that talent has become spread so thin right now because the big guys are going on bigger books and rejuvenating characters that we wouldn't have expected, that finding the A-list guys to really put on these titles, and we've got so many plans for so many cool stuff, and all the writers are clamoring for the bigger artists, there's not enough to go around, you know, and the exclusive wars have, you know, DC's got a lot and we've got ours, and it's always, you know, up who's going to be the next up-and-coming penciler. And it was like, you know, you look back 2 or 3 years ago and, you know, who would have thought you would have had JMS and Olivier Coipel on Thor or Mark Millar and Brian Hitch on Fantastic Four, and Marvel's always evolving with the books, the creative teams go up and down, but I think now, you know, we're definitely at a peak where the bigger writers are taking over the bigger books and they want to bring the bigger artists with them, and there's only so many A-list Wizard Top 10 guys who can go around, and it's interesting, but it's a challenge that we love because them going out of those books is driving the market up, and you know, DC's doing the same thing, so the market's very, very strong right now.
Just to follow up on that, it's funny, I think in each of those, like when Thor came out and was released, it was like guaranteed to be like it's going to be a flagship title. Like, how many flagship titles can you have?
I know, it's true. No, you never know how many flagship titles. And, you know, Marvel had high expectations for Thor out the bat, of course. You know, just JMS, Olivier put them together. It's like printing money, but we never expected it really, or at least I didn't. I could say it hit number one, the number one selling book of the month. It was like, wow, Thor. You know, like, who would have thought?
And so, do you think that Thor is going to keep rolling like that? Like, do you think it's going to keep staying right at the top, or do you think it was like a number one, so we went out and grabbed it?
You can never stay with stuff like that, but the stories I've read are just fantastic. Olivier is just kicking ass. There's a preview up online of issue 3 that's incredible. Yeah, with Thor Iron Man. Oh my god. And you know, I just think the book is going to be solid with that creative team. It's going to stay pretty close to the top month in, month out.
And Fantastic Four as well?
Oh, since Fantastic Four, definitely. Yeah, this the Brian, you know, people always make fun of, like to, you know, make snide comments. Oh, when are we going to see Fantastic Four? Or what's it going to be? And we're going to see 3 issues a year, stuff like that. And same with Ultimates 3. But, you know, these guys are working hard. And, you know, Marvel does learn from its mistakes and its missteps. And Brian's in his 4th issue of Fantastic Four now. He's going to be well into the arc. Mark's already written 9 scripts. And, you know, it's pretty much going to come out on time, monthly. The same with, you know, Ultimates 3 is going to have a regular shipping schedule as well. Launch in December. And Joe Madd has his day job, and he's working hard on those pages. He's well into the runs. So hopefully you're just going to see it continuing, and we're going to avoid kind of problems with late shipping.
Do you think you'll see more and more of that, folks will start bringing up, I think I read it from Loeb that he wants his art completed before they even announce it.
Before they announce it, yep.
It's not late because they have to get these marks every month.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of that, but there's also only so far you can wait. You know, Marvel is very aware that late shipping affects books, and they're going to try their best to not ship anything late. And, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. Pencilers go through personal crises. Writers have things that go on in their lives. And out of respect for the book and for the run, we don't want to put in fill-in issues sometimes. We want to give the creator time to get through whatever problem they're going through. And, you know, we're understanding of that, and we hope the fans are understanding of that. Normally the posters online aren't, but but, you know, things happen. And but, you know, Marvel makes its best efforts now, especially, you know, learning from its past mistakes on a lot of stuff, to schedule everything well in advance. So, I mean, look at something like what if that series? Marvels, Eye of the Camera, the follow-up to the to Marvels. And we announced that about 3 years ago. I think they're working on it when I started Marvel, maybe 6 years ago. Who knows? And still, they're still working on it. We're just committed. We're not going to put that out until it's ready so we can ship it on time. So hopefully you'll see more of that. Go ahead.
Marvel has their Young Guns, like they've had their second wave of Young Guns, and you say about, spreading the talent, maybe a little too thin in terms of having superstars on every book. Any young writers or artists that you can kind of throw out to keep an eye on?
Young writers and artists. Let me see. He's already on his way, and I'm really saying it's a no-brainer, but Dan Slott has just been firing on all cylinders on every book that he's doing. It's just been incredible. I think there's the artist that I've been really enjoying his work a lot recently is Koi Pham. What was he doing? He did some issues of X Factor. He's working on Incredible Hulk right now. And then from there, he's going to be, I think, moving on to some bigger, better things. Let me see. I'm trying to think. Chris Gage, who Greg had mentioned, is doing some fantastic stuff. Fred Van Lente, who's doing MODOK 11, is a really talented writer. He's got a good head on his shoulders and some crazy stuff coming out of his head that he's putting on the page. It's really fun. And there's an artist who I've worked with in the past. Her name is Alina Urosov. She's a Torontonian from here. Just beautiful, beautiful work. She's going to be coming over to Marvel now to do something that we just found out, which is going to be wonderful. And there's this guy making his comeback called Travis Charest, and I shall keep an eye on him. Well, Travis is back at Marvel. He's doing some cap covers, and he's going to be having his first interior pages and I was on an Ultimates special coming out in November. It's really going to be really cool. So there's just Marvel Comics Presents is going to be a book that you should definitely check out because that's going to be debuting new talent every month, writers and artists, and it's got a great mix of stuff by some really, really talented up and coming people.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Marvel creators get together and discuss comics not just next year, the year after, but what comics are going to be like 10 and 20 years from now, if they're going to be melding in with computers, if they're going to be holographic comics.
Yeah, we talk about the digital medium and where comics are going and, what formats are out there. Even just, even simple stuff in the future, like, what format are the graphic novels going to take? Are they going to reduce them to make them more manga-sized? And the oversized hardcovers are doing good. Just we talk about everything from, sizing format to page count to paper quality to, again, the digital medium and what way they're going to go. And, it's my personal opinion is that comics are always going to be comics. You're never going to lose the pamphlet. You're never going to lose the printed medium. There's something about comics that's not just the reading experience. It's the community and it's the collecting. I love running down the store every Wednesday and meeting my friends there, and we walk through the racks and open the books and look through them, the smell of the paper. I mean, you all know. You all go to the shops. You know what it's like. And that's just something that you're never going to lose. And comics is always going to have that. You want to read it and save it and collect it and be able to go back to it and share it. And digital medium is kind of a personal one. You're going to be able to, it's all at your computer. You can download it and look at it and you can share, but everything you're seeing is through your own eyes, where comics, you can look at it as a group. I mean, yeah, you can look at the screen too, but it just doesn't have the same feel for me, So, yeah, we do talk about it and get some heated arguments over beers about it. But normally, in my opinion, is that it's always going to stay that kind of premedium will always be around. At least I hope it's always going to be around. Let's go here and then we'll go over here.
What kind of positions at Marvel are there for graphic designers looking for possibly going into that?
Yeah, there are positions for graphic designers. The thing is, whereas with freelance artists, with writers, pencilers, inkers, colorists, painters, you're able to work anywhere and just submit your work digitally or by FedEx, Marvel likes to keep its graphic designers, just like its editors, in New York. So they like to have everyone come into the office. It's kind of a 9-to-5 job. They have an in-house, it's called the Creative Services Department. They do all the graphic design for Marvel books, Marvel movies, Marvel toys, I mean anything Marvel related. They take care of everything in-house. And there are one or two examples where designers will be asked to do stuff freelance and just logo design or typeset or just the overall look of a book, but most everything's handled inside, in-house. So there are opportunities there. We just hired two or three new graphic designers. Any Marvel internal positions, be it editorial or, legal, finance, graphic design, are posted on monster.com. But all those positions do require you to live and work in New York City.
Greg was talking earlier just about
how hands-on he is from, you know, writing it to, like, looking at pencils. And I'm just curious, how hands-on are, for, like, the A-lister guys who may have a couple books that they're writing every month, how hands-on are they from submitting the script to the finished product?
Just runs the spectrum. Brian Bendis wants to see everything. Pencils, inks, colors, letters, FedEx to him. He goes over the balloons, does the comments. I mean, it's just, he is very, very particular about that. He even, you know, has it, you know, so he has choice in his colors. You can't just assign an inker or assign a colorist on one of his books. Most people, you know, most writers want to know who their pencils are going to be and want some say in that. Some don't care even to that extent. Brian wants to know who everyone down to his letter is going to be. He's that particular about the quality of his books. Other people don't care. For example, Warren Ellis sends in a script, never wants to see it again. Never. Sometimes he said, I haven't seen it since I wrote the script, and that's just how Warren is. You know, he just, when he finishes it, he's done his job. Let the editors, let the, you know, penciler, the inker, the colors take it and do what they will with it. When it comes out, maybe he'll see it when he gets his comps. So, and it just, it runs a spectrum. But most, that's the rare exception. Most people, writers I know, like to see everything through each stage and at least have some kind of comment in it. There's sometimes where it's not possible. But, you know, given the digital age, it's a lot easier to get stuff back and forth. You want to see the lettering, and they just shoot it into the scanner and send you a PDF in a matter of minutes. So it just depends. But most people I know like to at least have some say in it. On the back.
Yeah, how do the resorts go down?
How do
Twice a year resort?
Oh, retreats, yeah.
Oh, retreats.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, the retreats, they're always, the way that we look at it is, if you're in the office, you're always going to be distracted. You're always going to be checking your own email. There'll always be someone, you know, paging you or something like that. So when we do the retreats, we do them off-site. We usually rent a conference room at one of our law firms, or, you know, we just recently did an X-Men retreat out in L.A. So a bunch of us after San Diego went up from San Diego to L.A., and some of the other people flew in from New York to L.A., and we used the Marvel West offices where we were secluded and wouldn't be disturbed. And basically, it's run over the course of 3 days. The first day is kind of a presentation where every office talks about what they have coming up to familiarize everybody in the room with who they're working on. Like, you know, these are our books. These are who's going to be appearing. And you list every character, minor character, who are going to be in the books. So everybody else has a grasp of where it's going to be. You know, if you have Cloak and Dagger in a backup story here, or, you know, I'm using, you know, Darkhawk and Loners. We make everybody in a room aware of it. Because it's all the editors pretty much know what's going on, but a lot of times a lot of the creators fly in. So you get, you know, Bendis, JMS, Loeb, Millar, Brubaker, Dan Slott. You get like seven or eight Gregs there. I'm there. Seven or eight guys that go, creators who go as well. And so you familiarize everybody with where everybody is in the universe. And then you usually break for lunch, and then you kind of start just plotting out the year. There's literally like across this wall, they just put up a huge calendar month by month, office by office, book by book, and to start writing stuff out, what the plans are. And then it just kind of builds into a conversation from there. Second day is usually just for kind of senior editors and creators only. The first day is all staff to kind of get everybody the feel. So second day is kind of just senior editors and creators only, so it's kind of focused and narrowed down. They could really get down to brass tacks and plan out where every book and every character is going to go, what it's going to be over the next year. And on the third day, they bring in the assistants and the associate editors to familiarize them with them so they can bring their opinions into play. It's always good to have, you know, multiple opinions on stuff, get their takes. A lot of times there's polls, you know. It was just the one was, you know, the unmasking of Spider-Man in Civil War 2. Should we do it or shouldn't we do it? And they took a poll around the room and, you know, tallied and felt, just kind of got the vibe of how everybody felt, because it was heated debate about it. Well, you see how it goes.
No, pretty close?
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah, it was pretty close. We just there's some stuff coming up over the next year. You're going to see that we're literally votes decided by one vote which way to go. So, and ultimately, Joe Q has the say. But, you know, it's very democratic the way Marvel does stuff. As cheesy as this sounds, just from the way that Stan built the company up and the way he's always interacted with fans, it's a family. We're all part of the Marvel family. As fans, we feel that way. That's where, you know, the Marvel zombie term kind of came from. And the way that Joe Q, which what he really brought back, Mark Gruenwald did it very well, Tom DeFalco did it well, and Joe did it well. That's why the editor-in-chiefs are so integral. They make the creators and the staff, the editorial staff specifically, feel like part of a family. So, you know, I hear stories about, you know, like other companies are more corporately run, And, you know, they go to their offices, they work, and they go home. And Marvel's the kind of place where, you know, we go to work, we go out after work, we go to the movies together, we spend our weekends together, our families know each other, our wives know each other, our kids know each other. And it is one kind of just family in the both sense of the word, figuratively and literally. And that's kind of how they run it. So that's why the retreats are kind of almost like picnics or barbecues sometimes. And it's amazing how we fight in those things. People just get at each other's throats and it gets really heated, but at the end of the day, we all work it out because we love these characters. They're just as much a part of our lives as our families are. So it's interesting. That's kind of how it all plays out. And then, you know, stuff changes after the retreat and we all get out and we get follow-up notes and emails and this big change. And like I was talking about yesterday, that World War Hulk was supposed to happen last summer and Civil War was supposed to be this summer. And we had World War Hulk planned out. We had one of these retreats, and then Mark Millar and Brian came, and they had this idea for Civil War. And it's like, holy cow, that works better if we do Civil War first. Give Planet Hulk more time to breathe, you know, space everything out. And so we just went off the tracks like that, and Marvel's just lean and mean, able to maneuver that way to completely change around the year publishing plan overnight almost. So you never know what's going to happen.
How far is it planned? Not specifically.
Yeah, we have about the next 18 months planned out. So at least through the end of 2008 into the beginning of 2009, we have a rough plan of where everything's going.
And beyond that, is there ideas longer term?
There are ideas longer term. Yeah, you'd be amazed how much, you know, people plan out. Like, you know, Brian has plans that are coming out now with, not to spoil things for people who haven't read the new Avengers stuff, but that you're seeing in different places with certain people that he's been planning out for 3 years, 4 years, even so back as far as Alias. There's things happening now in the new Avenger that he set up back in that series, and it's all going to be coming to light. So he has things planned out very well in advance, as does Mark, and a lot of places, people just, it keeps going. We're going, Red.
Spider-Man, mini, besides Amazing Spider-Man miniseries, annual specials, that might be coming out in the future?
I can't speak to that. I'm really not all up in the Spider-Man. Like, Spider-Man offices in a complete lockdown, even to a lot of the editors and consultants out there, because of everything that's going on with Brand New Day and One New Day. So I really can't speak to what's going on. The only other thing outside of Brand New Day that has been announced is Jeff Loeb and Jeff Campbell's Astonishing Spider-Man, but they're hard at work on that. And yeah, it's not on the schedule. The only thing I've currently planned, Spider-Man, come post One More Day, is Brand New Day, and there'll be more details. Well, we just jokingly refer to it as Astonishing Spider-Man. So.
Is that going to be in an ongoing series or a specific miniseries of its own?
It's a specific miniseries of its own. At least that's the plan for now. Go ahead.
What are your thoughts on DC and DC characters? DC's, I know, some company that's run more corporately. That's definitely.
Yeah, no, you know, and I spoke to this yesterday, is that people get these, especially online, it's heated up, you know, the DC versus Marvel rivalry. And I think it's much more intense in the fan community than it actually is in the creative community. And, you know, there are a couple sticking points between Marvel and DC, a couple people high above the editorial level that don't like each other. And they've each made comments at shows, and it leads to this, oh, Marvel hates, you know, DC, Joe Quesada hates Paul Levitz, and it's all this, you know, stuff that gets really flamed and fanned, but it's really not true. You know, Marvel editors and DC editors are comic fans. We kind of have the same job at different companies. We run in the same circles. We go to the same cons. We know each other. Most of us are extremely friendly. We drink at the same bars. They come to Marvel parties. We go to DC parties. There's just, you know, a few people above us and a few just long-standing rivalries or comments that have been made that really get blown up that people forget about, that people remember. They don't forget about, and it perpetuates this Marvel and DC hate each other when there's really not that much of a hatred. I mean, we're extremely friendly. We're, you know, friendly rivals, so to speak. We have the softball game every year. We have a great time. We go out and we drink beers. A lot of the Marvel editors, my good friend of mine, Mike Martz, really recently went over to DC in the past. You know, Matt Adelson, Joey Cavalier, Mike Conner, Marvel guys went over recently. You know, Steve Wacker, Bill Roseman comes back to Marvel. So it's interchangeable. We're all friends, and there's a friendly rivalry there, and there's, of course, a competition. But, you know, we don't hate each other. And as far as characters, I love DC characters. We get, you know, DC books in our bundle every week. I read DC books, some DC books before I even read some of my Marvel books. I shouldn't say that. I'll cover this up. I read all my Marvel books first. No, but it gets blown out of proportion sometimes, the hatred. But, you know, it's all just friendly, and we all love each other and love each other's characters. So I won't go here. It's all good. Oh, yeah, you're
Is there more rumors coming? Like anything ongoing? Any
Loners will have a be 10 pager in the holiday special in December. The 2007 holiday special will have some more loners, and there's some talks about hopefully continuing it. So hopefully, you know, I'm hoping, fingers crossed. Write your letters to mheroes@marvel.com. Demand more loners, but they'll be coming out. Hopefully, we'll have some kind of continuation or one shot in 2008. And I had this fantastic idea, which I thought was a fantastic idea, for a loner's holiday special, which was all loners, and it focused on three separate Christmas stories, one with the Slingers and one with Power Pack and one with the New Warriors, all told in kind of the old styles. And they want to do the actual Marvel holiday special instead, so like the Wolverine Spider-Man on the cover. And they gave me 10 pages of loans there, which I'm eternally grateful for. But now it's been brought up that, oh, maybe my idea for the Christmas stories can be turned into kind of some romance stories. I'm going to try to pitch it as a Valentine's special now. So hopefully there's a loaner's Valentine's special, and then we'll roll into more. But I keep writing that book for free till the cows come home. I love those characters. And recently Marvel emailed me just over the weekend because they put up the preview pages for Loners 5, where I revealed a secret character, you know, that makes a return to the Marvel Universe. And I really wanted to do it. And they're like, oh, no one's going to look at that. No one's going to even bother. And they put it up, and there's already like 8-9 pages of replies. They're like, holy cow, you know, what is this? And I was like, that's what we have to do. It. See, people, there's Loners fans out there. Approve my second series. We go over here. He hasn't asked a question yet.
I was wondering what might be happening with Runaways after Joss Whedon finishes his run.
It's Terry Moore and Umberto Ramos are taking over the book, and they are going to be starting actually very soon. Umberto's deep in some X stuff at the moment. Once he finishes his commitments there, he's going to be rolling right into Runaways, and you know, hopefully they're going to have a long and successful run on that book. And we'll go here. I think you had a question after, so.
Loners was definitely something I came across randomly in the store. Loved it ever since.
Thank you.
It was excellent. How did you choose the characters that you were going to write in the book?
To be honest, Brian Vaughn just kind of chose the characters in Runaways, and when he created them, they were originally called Excelsior, and they were called Excelsior in the Runaways book. And him and I went back and forth originally. He wanted kind of a character from each superhero universe, kind of, you know, one mutant, one spider person, you know, one person from the New Warriors, from a lot of the different teams. And that's how he originally came up with the lineup. And then when I was, you know, greenlit for doing the sequel, not the sequel, but doing a spin out of it, then I always liked Maddie Franklin because I was editing her when I was editing Alias with Brian. She was a character that I really liked, and even going back to the John Byrne, Bart Sears stuff, I always enjoyed her character. So I wanted to throw her on the team, and it just kind of grew from there. And then there's a few other characters that are going to be, you know, coming and going. This new secret character that's coming out in issue 5, and then bringing back Penance. I still call her Penance in the book. They call her Hollow. Gen 13, wow. DC, you got it in my head. Gen X, when Lobdell and Bacello were doing that, I just was my favorite book, still one of my favorite books of all time, and I've always loved Penance, and I really want to try to clean her up and simplify her, because I know a lot of people, you know, didn't like what happened to her, and even online, people were always, Scott Lobdell originally said his plan was this, and I hope he follows this plan. And I was like, wow, the fans are intense about her. But there is a plan to clean her up, and maybe not everything is going to be answered in Loners 5 and 6, but hopefully we're going to end in a place where people like it, and then grow her character and some of the other characters from there. And Darkhawk fans are going to clean up a lot of the but he's doesn't where what happened to the costume and the ship and the powers. That's all going to be taken care of in Loners 5 and 6 as well. So, go to you, sir, and then we'll go to Mario.
I do a lot of international traveling, and I go to the newsstands first whenever I go to a new country. And in Mexico, you go to the newsstand there on the open air of Las Ramblas, and there's like 200 titles, mostly financed by the Mexican government to increase literacy.
Mm-hmm.
But you also find very unusual things. I found a comic book, definitely not published by any of the major companies, but it had it has a John Romita Spider-Man fighting a legion of Batgirls in helicopters, and there's a Vampirella character in there too, and it's got a mixture of the styles of Gil Kane and Neil Adams and everybody in it.
And you didn't buy it?
I got
the
copy. I'm just wondering, A, if Marvel sees these things around, B, if they can do anything about them, and C, if you have any up in your office of oddities that have been collected.
No, we do see stuff like that around, and you know, we do pick them up, and when it comes to international, there's a lot of different places that we can't go or touch, and sometimes it's not even worth the legal trouble to go into it. So I can't really speak for legal or for, you know, Marvel's stance on this stuff, because I don't know it too much. But I know that, you know, Marvel does ask if we're traveling or out, and we do see some kind of, you know, unlicensed or, you know, kind of illicit goods that, you know, we do pick it up, and if we do buy stuff and bring it to the legal department, we are reimbursed from Marvel for doing stuff like that, because they like to do see what's on out there and, you know, see what they can do about it if it is a big infringement on our copyrights. And they do hang some of the funny stuff up in the legal office every now and then. And it used to, in the old building, there used to be a lot of that stuff up. In a new building, not as much. But yeah, every now and then we see just some really funny stuff. And here's a random question. I shouldn't even say it. It's always interesting to see what sells worldwide. I'm talking officially Marvel licensed product now. And, you know, just, you know, you'd think that obviously the video games and the comics and stuff do good, but each company license, each country licensed random things based on what their culture are and stuff like that. And I travel back and forth to Japan a lot. And, you know, the Japanese don't publish as many Marvel comics as we would like. However, they are very pretty brisk in their licensing business with character logos and brand recognition and stuff like that. And the most popular Marvel licensed product that sells far and away better than anything else is boys' Marvel logo underpants bought by teenage schoolgirls. And it's just incredible because they all, they got the little logos on the band and the logo on the front and the logo on the butt, and they're eating it up because they're all in skirts. When it goes up, they, you know, they just want the logo or something on there that just makes people laugh, and it's incredible. They sell so much of this boys' underwear bought by girls that it's crazy. We'll go all the way in the back.
The next wave, are they going to be more next wave?
No. Yeah, you know, Next Wave did really well for Marvel, and Warren and Stewart had a tale that they wanted to tell, and they are the creative team on that book. When Stewart moved over to Ultimate Spider-Man, Warren decided, you know, he's not going to write the book anymore without Stewart. So you will see those characters appearing in certain places. You know, you'll see I think Machine Man now is in Ms. Marvel, and you've seen Pulsar around in a couple places, and they're in their kind of Next Wave designs and acting those. But as for the team, you won't be seeing anything really together unless it's Warren and Stewart that are going to come back and do it. How am I doing on time?
Actually, we're out.
Oh, we're out? Okay. And one last question. Anyone got any good question? All right, he would have his hand up first. We'll go there. What's going on with the initiative when... Yeah, you know, we'll see how that goes. I mean, there's been a couple of hiccups along the way. You know, mistakes are made by, you know, any person, any company. We are only human. But the initiative, there are still plans. The 50-state initiative is going to keep rolling out. You have the order out there now. The Avengers, Avengers Initiative in training, Dan Slott's book. You've seen some of the Texas Rangers, and slowly but surely you're going to see a couple more of the initiative people rolling out in different places. So you'll see the teams, and hopefully they'll clean up all that, who's dead and who's not, soon enough. All right, well, look, thank you all for coming. It's great being here. Hope you enjoyed the show, and, you know, thanks for picking up the books and supporting Marvel.